The Vox Markets Podcast.
Oh. It's the fourth day of January 2024. I'm joined by Hot Stocker, Paul Hill, full-time investor, full-time equity analyst. You know what, fella, how's the new year treating you? How was Christmas and the festive period?
Yeah, it's been good. Just a nice little start. I've been shooting arrows, a bit like old Luke Littler last night at the Ali Pally. And he picked up sort of 200,000 grand. So, yeah, not too bad. But, yeah, it's up to our sort of like responsibility now to help people sort of select a few sort of stocks for 2024. And it seems to be starting up, you know, very much as planned, i.e. such that you've had a bit of a rotation. Portfolio, investors have rebalanced their portfolio. So they've come out of the sort of the Mag 7 and the Mag 10 and, reorientated a bit further down the food chain into those stocks that haven't actually participated in the rally, things like healthcare. So pretty predictable, really. What's your sort of thoughts?
Well, my thoughts, first of all, is no way is that guy 16. Literally, I went to Tottenham, right? I went to Tottenham. Tottenham, Bournemouth. And literally, we could see Madison, who's injured, but one of the players in the box with Luke. And one of the guys said, oh, that's Luke up there with Madison, one of the players. Mm. And Madison must be, I think, mid-20s. And Luke looked older than him. There's no way that guy is 16. No way. Phenomenal darts player. Unbelievable. And secondly, you say it's our responsibility to help people make some money. I often think, right, a lot of the time, it is, this is one of the things you've always learned. I find good investors always take responsibility for their own actions. And I think it's one of the biggest things you're going to learn. Whenever you sort of, we'll talk about ideas, and that's what they are. Mm. Some of them may not play out, okay? But if you invested on the back of an idea we've had and not done a lot of research and it doesn't go to plan, you can only lay the blame at yourself. You have the password to your broker account. It's your money. Take responsibility. Do lots of research, because we may be completely talking nonsense. We may be talking bias because we own. And once you're investing in the stock, you become subjective. You've got money skin in the game. And so I think always for 2024, if anything, do research, more research, more research, and come before you invest, be very cynical, because once you are invested, you are subjective and you almost suffer confirmation bias. But anyway, thanks for joining us. We are live on YouTube. By all means, hit that subscribe button, like, comment, any questions. Christopher says, morning, happy new year. Yeah, and I do think it's going to be a good year for the markets, but I do think the economy is going to get worse. So I think we're in a sticky, we've seen the US markets, they've rallied like crazy. It's insane what the American markets are doing at the moment, I think.
Let's just delve a bit further into that. Because obviously I think it's important at the start of the year to sort of like put that macro view, the sort of overlay for our stock picking. So you believe then the economy is going to take a bit of a dive, do you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is that the UK, Europe and the US?
The thing is, we suffer from, like I said, the US is our moon. So it affects us, gravitational pull. Whatever happens in the US sort of happens over here. Even though our markets are largely, decent value compared to the US, it'll still be affected by sell-offs in the US, But I do think, the economy is going to slow down. It's the medicine, isn't it, of what central banks are doing. It's what they want to do. They have to slow down, demand to bring down prices.
Will that be a soft or a hard landing, Justin?
Do you know what? It's funny they do this terminology, but I don't think, if you ask anyone...
Shall I give you a definition? A soft landing is GDP, say, round about zero, slightly negative. A hard landing is a bit of a deeper recession, probably round about 1% negative. And a no landing, which is what the market's currently pricing in, is roughly round about 1% in the US and 0.5% in the UK.
I think generally nobody knows. And I think, this is the thing. And I think there is going to be, the economies are slowing down. It's going to be a rough patch for the real economy. Now, what the markets do is a little bit different, of course, because they're steered by central banks and what they're saying. And if we are going to have a tough economy and people, being laid off, losing jobs, then central banks will have to step in. And so the markets will, sort of price that in. But we also seen that, especially in the UK, central banks lag. They lag the real economy. So when it starts getting hard, when are they going to start easing up? Maybe the talk will help. But I mean, I just think they'll lag. But I also think, you know, demand will come down. It'll be people being laid off. There'll be less demand for lots of, you know, companies. And I think the economy is going to be very tricky in the next, you know, few months or so. But when the central banks step in and indicate they are going to ease, I mean, it's already happened in the US. That's, I suppose that's why it's rallying like crazy. But now they're trying to pull people back and rein them in because the American market's not far from their all-time highs. I know it's largely the effect of the Magnificent Seven, whatever they're called. But
I think you're spot on there, Justin. I think we're going to go through a tougher economic period, both sides of the Atlantic, which is going to force the hand of the central banks, as we've seen, and that's actually shown through in bond yields coming down. And in fact, a lot of the market are pricing in significantly more Federal Reserve cuts and Bank of England cuts, in fact, than actually what the policymakers are actually saying. So round about sort of 625 basis points drop in the US, and probably 1.5% as gain in the UK as well. So that should support the equity markets. Now, the next question, if we are going to go through a tougher economic period, is what does that mean in terms of corporate profit margins and corporate EPS? Because at the moment, we're sort of like the market's expecting 10%, 11% EPS growth out in the States and roughly around about 6 to 7 in the UK and about 5 in Europe.
Yeah, well, the trouble is, it's hard to predict because we know how things work. You know, once things start getting bad, or you know, the outlook starts getting bad, people start reining in, so it exacerbates the problem. You know, that's the issue, and I think that will happen. But like I said, I don't know. I just think that I've no idea on the specifics. I just think, you know, after Christmas, people spent a lot. You know, the big demand for lots of, you know, businesses happens, you know, last quarter of last year maybe, and now you see a slowdown in demand, in growth, and I don't know where that'll head. But like I said, you always have this sort of downward spiral if, when people start reining in spending, you know, like less demand, less goods, people will start laying off people, and it starts getting worse. And of course, and I think we will have a really tough like quarter one economically in the real world. I think businesses are going to struggle. Obviously, not all businesses, but
let's put a bit of granularity and a bit of specifics on that one. Because, okay, let's just run the rule. Because if we're going to get a softer economic climate with interest rates coming down, okay, what that
how
means,
fast are they coming down? That's the trouble.
I mean, yeah, they're coming down also because of inflation is falling, and that's been driven by demand softening as well. Okay, yeah. So that all makes sense. We like that. Now, what does that mean for corporate profits? Well, top-line growth is going to be difficult, no doubt about it. Companies have still got their existing cost base. And as you rightly point out, the only way they're going to shed cost is they're going to, you know, get rid of headcount. So unemployment is going to go up. Yes, they'll benefit from lower input costs and lower freight costs, but they're going to struggle maintaining their existing sort of above-average profit margins, particularly as supply is going to stay at least at the same, if not grow, because supply chain is still normalizing in places like the automotive and aerospace sector. So where do you want to be? There's two areas, in my view. You still want, as we've rightly talked about, companies with pricing power, companies with IPR. You probably also want the small cap sector, because that's already been hit by the rising rates and therefore should see a reduction in its rates, because it hasn't gone to the bond market for securitization. And therefore, if you do get a steepening yield curve, it will be a beneficiary rather than the large caps. And so, and also you want, you know, clearly companies that can get through a tougher patch with sound balance sheets. So I actually think what you've talked about there in terms of a slower economy, steepening yield curve, lower inflation is exactly what we've been hitting, you know, the pounding the table about for the last 6 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would be, when you get the small caps, I still think, you know, it'll ease up a bit the equity markets. But I still think, you know, if you're looking at, you know, pre-revenue loss-making companies that have good potential, then, you know, there's two questions you always have to ask yourself. You know, how much cash have they got? How long will it last? So it's still not going to be easy raising money. So I, if you're going for, you know, micro nano caps, I still prefer, you know, companies that have got money to get the profitability or are generating cash, you know. because I like I said, I think
well, let's talk about one of those then, because one of your stocks, Destiny Farmer, just came out with results. Yep. Well, not results. It was basically there was I think the guy, I can't remember what his name, Chris Tovey, I think his name
Chris
was,
Tovey,
basically saying he's thinking about some strategic options over his one of his key nasal assets, is XF73, isn't it? What's your take on this one?
Yeah, well, listen, this, there were, I mean, the share price is off by 6% a day, but they were suggesting before he came in a deal at the end of the year, pretty much. But he's come in, you know, done a full review on this bigger potential here than he thinks. And so he said, you know, he is going to take the time to get the right deal done. But they do say here, and I don't know what this means, you know, they said, they're continuing discussions with a number of potential partners with a view to delivering the best deal to maximize shareholder. He said, we will provide further update in due course. What does that mean? To a shareholder, that could mean, oh, the deal's done, it's in the bag, or it's very close. Or other people says, well, that's not even close. So, you know, there's no denying there's significant value here. Like they're saying their sales in America alone is worth $2 billion. And you've got this NTCDM3 already deal done. But what I do like here, like I said, already, you know, you think loss-making companies, how much cash they got, how much are going to last? And they say they're funded through to Q2025. To me, that's fine. I'm going to sit here and wait. The deal will get done before that, probably. And I think that will come with a milestone upfront payment, and that'll extend that runway further. So I'm happy here. Like I said, it's one of the higher risk holdings I have. It's pre-revenue. It's biotech, you know. But largely, like I said, two phase three, pretty much, lead assets here. So I think, you know, 60 million, whatever it is, for those two assets. It's very good. One deal on one, deal coming on the other. But like I said, the most important thing of any loss-making companies is how much cash they got. Because you're only raising money in these markets. And so the cash there, runway is
I actually think the most important thing about Destiny is the quality of its science and what it said to me with Chris Tovey, and also what you've talked about with the upskilling, effectively upgrading of the board. I mean, you've got some really big hitters there, haven't you, as well, who have been attracted by the asset and the quality of the technology. My instinct is that I'm very surprised the shares have gone down this morning, actually, because I would have read that quite positively. But the market does weird things at times.
Yeah, I think people are almost, you know, expecting a sort of deal straight away, almost, you know, those deals. As soon as the RNS come out, the business update,
you've got to be patient. You've got to be patient with these things. If they've got good quality assets, then there's going to be the right deal. It's pointless rushing and doing a wrong deal. You've got to do the right deal with the right partner, with the right distribution at the right level. So I think they're doing it perfectly, because they don't need to make a knee-jerk reaction decision just because it's turned the clock calendar. They need to get the right partner, the right sort of complementary technology to be able to really commercialize this across the world.
Exactly. I think, you know, one of these things are, I mean, like I did say before that, you know, one of the most important things is portfolio management, and people don't talk about it that much. And they talk about what stocks to pick, you know, but how to manage that. And like I said, I had a couple of stop losses kick in initially, because I was overweight. It was pretty much over 20% of my portfolio, and it dropped down, kicked in a couple of stop losses. I still hold a decent chunk, but I I'm not going to sell before now. I mean, I think it has to drop significantly now for any more stop losses to kick in. But I'm happy the level I'm at. And like I said, it's, you know, this is the kind of stock. It's one of the stocks I think there's always room in the portfolio for one of these hope pipe potential stocks, pre-revenue, loss-making, that could deliver multiples of your initial investment. As long as you're overexposed on it, you know, as long as you keep the position comfortable, then, you know, like I said, I'm never going to lose money on this now because I've got stop losses in. To me, it's almost a risk-free investment, and the upside could be significant. So I'm happy to hold. Like I said, the board, you know, high quality. I mean, if they have to raise money, I've no doubt they'll do it, because, like I said, they've got a lot of money behind that now and a lot of quality. But it's the thing is, they don't need to. That's a good thing. And to me, that says a lot in this market. They don't need to raise money. And I think that cash runway has been extended. So it just proves they're being quite prudent with their cash. So, I'm happy there.
Fine. I mean, mid 2025, that's plenty of time to do strategic stuff. So, my view, no problem. Now, another
If they don't do it by then, it'll be questioned the quality of the board.
Another one which also sort of like fits that mold is Lung Life AI, and they came out with stupendously good sort of like validation study results for their lead lung LB early stage cancer diagnostic or blood draw test, etc., on Tuesday, and obviously the shares shot up on the back of it. I mean, just really confirmed how, you know, that how good the science is above its the existing standard of care, which is largely a CT scan. So they came out with a predictive, a positive predictive value of 81% compared to a CT scan of 60%. And it's going to be used as a sort of like a rule-in test for patients. And there's about a million small nodule sort of cancer patients, indeterminate cancer patients out in the States. So it's a sort of $2 billion total addressable market that they're addressing. They're going to soft launch it first. They're going to do an early access program, which means just getting all the sort of like the, you know, how the utility of the actual test in hospitals, get that sorted, also get the insurance, all that sort of sorted, and the billing and all this sort of stuff. And that'll be about 3 months to 6 months. And then they're going to really drive it. And I think it also, I mean, given the how good the technology is, and it's, you know, it's really sort of like it's first in class sort of technology, works off circulating tumor cells, and it's got the AI side of it as well. The board will probably also explore options in terms of how to actually take this one to market, not only in the US, but in the first of all, but also, you know, worldwide. And you know, there's, you haven't got to look too far, because on the board as one non-executive, you know, director is Sarah Barrington, who's the CEO of Verici, and she brought on, I mean, she's got a basically, again, a best-in-class or first-in-class test for kidney donor transplants, and they brought in Thermo Fisher, a big diagnostics company. Now, I think, you know, Lung Life will probably also explore those type of options, and one party that, I mean, I say it's total hype, you know, sort of like in my hypothesis, I've got total guesswork, but you wouldn't look too far away from somebody like a Roche Diagnostics, who are big into oncology and big into diagnostics worldwide, to sort of take this up and, you know, pay an upfront, you know, sort of like payment and go to market with it, and the IPR stays with the actual company. So that's a well-trodden model that I think probably Destiny Pharma will probably also have a good look at as well, because they've got brilliant technology, best in class, and it's really getting it into the hands of doctors and helping patients as quickly as they can over a broader sort of geographical footprint. So really, really good news. I mean, this has been volatile because it is pre-revenue, but they will make, you know, revenues this year, and then will rapidly increase thereafter. The important bit is, as I've always said about, you know, biotech and diagnostics, is having that really brilliant technology, the best in class technology. If you invest in it, then there will be a good outcome for shareholders.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I got tripped out on this because illiquidity. What's annoying is I couldn't buy this in my Barclays ISA. Barclays don't do it for some, because it's got ink on the.
It was a Reg S share.
Many, I don't know how many, but Barclays didn't do it. So I had to take money out and go to IG. And it's so illiquid. And it taught me a lesson. I did have a stop loss kick in, and literally they all triggered off. And I thought, okay, well, that's happy. It's annoying, because I love the company. I love the technology, but it's so illiquid because it's not traded on many platforms. It's a lesson learned in the, you know, and I only took about 3% of this total portfolio value initially, but it doubled. I bought like when it crossed 50-day moving average here, and it doubled and then almost tripled. So it ended up taking like 9% or 10% of my portfolio value. And it was too big. I couldn't, you know, it's too liquid for me. I couldn't buy it. So it's, but I think, hopefully that'll be, you know, as it gains momentum and interest, the liquidity will improve. But fantastic technology, amazing, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you look, I looked at stats on this before, it's quite morbid, but I thought, what kills most people, right? And it's one of three things. It's heart disease, dementia, or cancer. They're the big three. If you're over 65, you die, you pretty much just one of those, you know. And like I said, heart disease is pretty much a lifestyle thing, so you can't really cure that overnight. And dementia, you know, they're looking at ways of curing that. Cancer is almost always trying to find, you know, ways of improving outcomes for cancer. And like I said, theirs is one that does that. And lung cancer is, you know, the biggest killer of all the cancers. Mm. And so that early diagnosis is key. It's massive, huge potential. And like I said, it'll, you know, help so many people. So it's a huge area. So it's very interesting.
And just to finish off that one, I mean, basically the house broker Investec have got a target price on it of £2.21. So, and compared to 59p currently. So there's plenty of upside. I interviewed the CEO, Paul Pagano, last night, and the video went live just before 8 o'clock this morning. So if people want to have a good look at what he said, but it's really, really encouraging, and they have done an absolutely fabulous job, no doubt about it. And that's the whole point of bringing, you know, of AIM, is that you fund and bring companies, you know, their innovative new products to market and get them growing, get them into the hand of customers and patients, and they'll improve the quality of the world and also, you know, bring jobs to those companies and to those areas. So, absolutely. Yeah. Tip the hat. Now, another one of your portfolio, Truefin, came out with...
Yes.
I think it was a sort of inline trading update, but they did say they'd been struggling a bit in their gaming side, hadn't they?
PlayStack. Yeah. So it's now three parts of this. They sold Virtus, which is sort of IFA sort of thing. It's boring, but you know. But I do like the thing. The reason why I'm holding this, I do sort of like PlayStack, but you know. And it will generate revenue, and they say they're going to be EBITDA, you know, profitable this year. But there's been quite a few delays. They've done platform deals, and there's been a few delays on that. Nevertheless, you know, top line growth is going nicely, and it's up 32%, pretty much to 20.2 million. So they are again funded to profitability, which I quite like. But the thing I like here is Atago, and I think, you know, it's the best in class. I mean, auction is very stable, so long term contracts with you know, councils of 3 to 5 years, pretty much. But the sexy stock here is Atago, and I said it's been partnered up with Lloyds and Sage. There's other deals going on, and that is where I think, you know, this is the kind of company you want to search for. It's like a software company that's come from nothing, and now two FTSE 100 companies are using it because it's best in class. I mean, Lloyds did have their own solution, not as good as Atago, and Lloyds invested in Atago. That says a lot to me, and that's what I'm looking for. And this year, and maybe next year as well, you'll start seeing the revenue growth in Atago picking up massively. And so, to me, that's the one of interest. And I think I think it's going to get stronger as well in this environment.
My question is, if it's making 20 million of revenue, how come it's not profitable? The adjusted EBITDA, particularly as PlayStack, is actually just reaching break even.
There's a bit, well, I don't know if you know, obviously, you know what software companies, big software companies, they take a lot of development going on. So I just think it's that sort of, you know, back end development integrated into Lloyds and Sage. It's taken maybe, I don't know, upscaling in workforce or developers or whatever.
What are the gross margins on it? I mean, I thought they'd just
be... I don't know,
be...
I have to get my spreadsheets up, but I'll have to look. But,
okay, I'm just, that's the one thing which when looking at that, I mean, you know, it's obviously very high growth, and it's in a nice place, got great partners, but be something I'll just have a quick look at.
I think that, let me just have a quick look. In fact, you talk about something else, I'll find my spreadsheet now.
Another one which came out with an update today was Inspiration Healthcare. And as you know, one does neonatal, sort of like ICU and baby warmer units, etc., that it sells into the UK and Europe and around the world. Anyway, it's had a really good strategic deal. It wants to get it long term. It wants to go into the US. And obviously, that's the biggest medical market in the world. And rather than actually building that capability with distribution, it's decided to actually buy it, and it's got one of its top performing neonatal sort of ICU, you know, baby warmer units, etc. It's seeking approval from the FDA and hopefully going to get that later this year and then launch the product in 2025. And so it could actually put its own warehousing and supply chain out there or use a third party. But what it's actually decided to do is to actually buy an existing sort of like ventilation or medical ventilation business out in Florida that's got distribution around the US and also has access into the neonatal clinics. And is using that basically as its vehicle to access the US market, really at a very cheap price, upfront payment of $1.5 million. The company already makes revenues of 1.4. So it's about one time sales. It's loss making, but it'll be profitable or earnings accretive in the second year in 2025. And this looks absolutely a perfect deal, really, because, you know, why do you want to actually use a third party and give away sort of 40, 50% of the profits if you don't need to? And why do you want to build it, you know, build that distribution capability when you don't need it? And they've basically bought that. They've got that beachhead into the US at a good price, and they're sort of future-proofing their model for the US, assuming, of course, they get FDA approval. So I love the deal. I think that's a really, really sensible move they've done. And it could, you know, assuming things go to plan, it could really sort of, by 2025, 2026, 2027, this could really launch the business out into the US, because their products are, you know, proven sort of best in class in the UK and, you know, elsewhere. And there should be no reason why it can't get, can't do well in the US, assuming the FDA approves it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I've got to look at the chart on that. It's recovered nicely. And look at that previous support there. It's now on that, which would be resistance. Breaks through that. That's quite nice. It's looking quite good. I mean, obviously, it's had a bit of a hammering, but you can see that really sell-off breakneck and bounce back up nicely. That, so I quite like that.
Well, the directors, the reason why it bounced up, because the directors were buying big time when it dropped off. So they're obviously pretty much convinced that things are going to work. Anyway, it's still work in progress. It's still, well, you know, I think I bought it around about sort of high 40s, 50 or something like that. So still, I've lost money on it. But I always say I never buy at the bottom and I never sell at the top. And if I can make money in between, I'm happy.
Yeah. So TrueFin, 69% with their gross margins there.
Oh,
so,
right. Well, that's really weird. Then they've got some pretty heavy, you know, costs below. If they can actually save on that, then that would be rapidly profitable, wouldn't it? 69%, that's a good gross margin as well.
Yeah, there we are. There's efficiency, of course. Everything else is lost in there. But it's just a bit of time. I think Stargo is the one I'm liking there. But it's had a little weakness of late. And it's one of the ones that held up doing the thing. Literally, it held up doing the sort of bear market. And now it's rolling over a bit. I don't care. I don't have a massive position, but it's one of those ones that I do think Stargo's best in class. I think it'll knock the ball at the park eventually. It just takes a bit of time when you're dealing with these big companies. It's never quick, is it? You know. So
putting a bow on the early stage healthcare stocks. We've got Bellascura as well, which just before Christmas, after our last hot stocks, they came out with very good news that China had approved their portable oxygen concentrator out in Hong Kong and Beijing, and so essentially their third party manufacturer will now be able to sort of like go full bore in terms of, you know, selling that product out there, which clearly is a huge market, China, because, you know, they're big, heavy smokers, and they will, the historical air pollution. They've got a lot of, you know, patients with COPD. So this one could go really, really well. They're still waiting to conclude the takeover of, the small sort of like deals. It's basically a shell company that has cash on AIM to be able to help fund it. And that should happen fairly soon. I don't know, it's all guesswork again, but I suspect, you know, because there's been a lot of M&A going on, the takeover panel has been swamped with work heading into Christmas, and it's just taken a bit of time to review it and get that, because there should be no reasons why that deal doesn't happen. But frankly, you know, the technology is again top notch, and it's a race to, you know, shoot. They will get, if assuming that deal goes ahead, then they will have sufficient cash to reach operational profitability, and there'll be a significant ramp up of of volume. The demand is not a problem. The demand's out off the charts. It all comes down now to the funding, which should come through with the acquisition and the execution, and they've got all their supply chain part. They've built these things before, so they know how to do it. And the third party manufacturer, which is a subsidiary of Foxconn, is well known as being one of the world's leaders. So I think this could really, I think 2024 could be a real big inflection point for Bella Scorer, but hey, you know, there still is a lot of heavy lifting to do. But the shares have come a long way. They've really fallen very like all of the sort of the early stage sort of tech companies, whether they're software, healthcare, anything like that. They've been whacked, haven't they, over the last 18 months.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I just posted a tweet out, and I'm tweeting it for ages on intelligent ultrasound. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? Because this has had weakness in the share price. It's just come down, it's bounced a little bit. I'm thinking, if you look at their forecast growth, it's phenomenal. I mean, in fact, let me just show you, where is it? Here we go. This is revenue from forecast, from revenue AI alone, right?
Yeah.
This is, and there aren't many companies commercializing AI properly, you know? But this is their growth anyway. You know, it's 22% compound growth. They literally, you know, the 30 million market cap, they're going to be forecast for two times sales, very much, and they're going to be profitable on current funds. So I think the biggest ultrasound manufacturer in the world is using their equipment. Mm. It's like, it's AI stuff. And I think, what? I don't understand how this is, you know, the potential here is huge, but it's been, again, it's very illiquid, it's sluggish, just moves around a bit. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? I see companies that are pre-revenue, you know, with nowhere near profitability, with not that potential, or signups or partners, valued a lot higher than this. I think, I don't know what's going on with this. It's just one of those things.
Yeah, all I would say, okay, is that the fundamentals drive this business, okay? And I think the technology is fabulous and the partners are really, really good, etc. And I think you've got to treat the chart with a bit of sort of like, you know.
Yeah, it's so illiquid.
It's so illiquid. Anything with massive illiquidity is really, you can't trust the chart because it can go up quite fast and it can go down very fast. And therefore you very, very get, you know, trained. The charts tend to work more where there's a bit more liquidity in it. And
absolutely.
I think with this one, you've just got to be patient and just say, look, okay, I believe the technology, I believe the story, and I'm just going to hold it through thick and thin. And, you know, just see how, just forget about the volatility. I mean, I do that all the time because, you know, I basically invest in lots of companies that frankly are difficult for me to get in and difficult and impossible for me to get out. So, you know, I just have to accept that in between, I'm not going to be moving shares and holdings around because, you know, I can't.
Yeah, well, that's on the spreadsheets, that's why I actually put in average daily volumes here. And literally, say on Truefin, you know, 50 grand, that's what it is on a day. Mm. And I put 10th of that in because if you're in trouble and you need to get out, you're not going to clear more than 10% of that on a down day.
No, you're not, no.
I sort of put those in as well, just as a warning to me, pretty much, you know, as you know, the liquidity of stocks. But and it is frustrating sometimes. Like I say, you can see it, literally, you'll see like almost someone sell, you know, literally 100 quid of shares. And he'll take it down a little bit. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
You're selling 100 quid of shares for. Anyway. Yeah.
Another one which has come out with sort of like, you know, continue is Equals now.
Yeah.
It's worth just sort of like, you know, spending a couple of minutes on it. I mean, basically what they've said just between Christmas and New Year is that they haven't yet concluded a deal on the strategic review. Whether the company's going to be sold or not, the key party seems.
So look at that, Paul. We're just talking now. Look at that. It literally hit the 200-day moving average, come back down within a second of us talking about it. Sorry, it's come out of equal. Sorry.
Not that you're looking at this chart very closely.
That's nuts, though, isn't it? Equals gone into it.
But Equals, yeah. So in between Christmas and New Year, they came out that they'd extended the deadline for their strategic review to the 24th of January because they hadn't finalised the price. And what that means, and the shares had sold off beforehand and then have just come back up. They're about 124, I think. What that says to me is there really is... I'm now more confident that they're going to conclude a deal. I'm not super confident, but more confident. I was 50-50, but I actually think it's about a 60-70% chance now that they're going to conclude it because there clearly is a lot of interest. And, you know, I mean, again, it's total guesswork, you know, but I would say that, you know, Madison Dearborn and the board are just negotiating price, are just deciding through the final bits and pieces of the due diligence what is going to be a clearing price for the shareholders. And over the next few weeks, I'd expect them to say, yes, it's either this number and it's agreed or it isn't, and they'll walk away. But Madison would have disappeared if they weren't strongly interested in buying this company. It's a matter of sort of like, you know, what number they're going to put on it. And I don't know. I mean, I would say a fair value for it. And this is just, again, my, you know, just been broadcast. I'd say 18 to 20 times PE, which would be about 155 to 175 would be a reasonable fair value. But it all comes down to, you know, whether things like Madison believe that, you know, somebody like Fleecor, who are trade buyer, could potentially come back in, and they can do, because they only dropped out probably because they didn't want to go through, you know, sort of like an auction process and wanted exclusivity. But once the deal's been announced, then other parties can also enter the fray. So they clearly want to put, if Madison wants it, they clearly want to put a knockout deal out there, or a deal that's going to deter others coming on. And they want irrevocable, you know, sort of like undertakings from the actual shareholders. So anyway, it's work in progress. This says to me, to be perfectly honest, on the balance of probability, a deal's going to get done. But as I've always said, I'm a happy holder. If it doesn't happen, then I'll be very comfortable holding this for another 12, 18 months, etc. It's my biggest position.
Yeah. So essentially, like I said, it's growing. The returns have been excellent for shareholders. So what's, you know, what's the thoughts behind this deal? Why do they want to do this deal? Because they said they remain confident in the longer term growth prospects of the business. So why are they doing this?
Well, it's basically because they've had interest beforehand, and therefore the board basically thought, right, okay, their view is that they've got a really long, you know, long runway ahead for the company, and it looks attractive, blah blah blah. But they'd be remiss not to actually explore options where they've had multiple parties of showing, you know, they want to actually buy the business, Fleecor and Madison, and maybe others as well. And therefore, you know, it'd be crazy not to give the shareholders at least a chance to actually have a look at it. Companies get a lot of criticism for not taking, you know, sort of like offers or highlighting these to shareholders, because, and then you have caught a bit of a false market. I mean, I've seen so many people, experienced investors, really having a go at companies for not actually saying they're having, you know, there are discussions and serious interest, because it creates a bit of a false market. So, with a fiduciary duty on the directors, I think they've done the right thing, actually. I think legally, you know, they could do either. There's no doubt about it. But actually, I think they've probably done the best thing. Amidst the downside, to me, is not, you know, whether they're confident. The downside is there's disruption, because, you know, in terms of winning, you know, winning new customers and re-signing customers, and it looks as though everything's doing okay because they're online. But anything whereby you get a change in control can not be very helpful for a B2B business. But it doesn't seem to have affected the company too bad. That's the only downside by going public on it.
Yeah. Do you know what? You remind me there, you mentioned Fleetcore. And I was saying recently, there's been a lot of data out about EV charging, you know, and governments all not hitting targets on EV chargers in motorway service stations, high power chargers. They want everyone to have high power chargers, but apparently there's only 4 in 10 of these high power. And all this data, and I was thinking, Joe, you're seeing more and more data come from ZapMap. And I thought, do you realize who owns ZapMap? It's owned 49% by Good Energy. And also Fleetcore put some money into it. Because, of course, Fleetcore, very big company as well. And do you know what's quite interesting, John Heumann about? And he quite likes companies, not the actual story, but the picks and shovels play into the story. And you often hear this, like I said, everyone's focusing on charging and charge points, which are quite capital intensive, putting charges all around the state. But the data that comes from those goes through ZapMap, which is now the biggest provider of data and paying points. You can pay via there, you can see accessibility. And that's owned by Good Energy. And so data is the thing, isn't it, behind these things? You know, it's very important to hold that 49% they hold of that ZapMap. People don't talk about that too much, but thinking it's a very interesting play, especially when you've got Fleetcore on board as well. But
if you've got unique data that people can't replicate, then I'm with you. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, people sell it. I mean, look at that. That's a chart of Good Energy. But people are buying that.
Are you still in Good Energy?
Yeah, still in that. I've seen so many updates recently on EV charge in the UK, and the source of that data is always ZapMap. And it's almost like, you know, when you see, I likened it recently to like, you know, when you see businesses going through difficult times and red flags. And you see Begbie's training always used by the BBC a lot. Now, on EV charging, any data and stats on EV charging, ZapMap is behind that. And you realise that's really, and at the time I didn't think, what's the data about? How can they make money from that data? But you realise now they are the source of all EV charging data pretty much because they are the number one provider. So it's going well. And of course, you've got the business as well, which is profitable, plenty of cash. But it's done very well.
I mean, you've done really well on that. I mean, I've got to tip my hat to you there, Justin, because you bought it, about 9 months, a year ago, and you were banging the table for a long time. And, and you were saying this is massively undervalued in terms of obviously the cost of living crisis and helping companies and all this sort of stuff. And then it just suddenly took off.
Yeah. Well, I have the same frustration. Like I said, with intelligent automation. I didn't see that being taken out. I see it getting taken out at multiples where it is, pretty much, or a high premium, not multiples, but a high premium. Or something's, like I said, sometimes you've got to believe your instincts. You can be wrong sometimes. And the only protection you have against that is like a portfolio management. Don't go overboard on something. But sometimes you've got to believe the instinct that there's a great business. Because that's what, if you're an investor, that's what you're looking for. It's a great business. It's not a trading opportunity. It's a great business. You want, even if it wasn't enlisted, you'd want a little share of that business, or you want to own it, outright. Mm. And so, Good Energy and like Intelligent Ultrasound are like that, And anyway, I think, like I say, in the end, it'll Intelligent Ultrasound will come good, but it's just a matter of time, like you say. So frustrating. I do. I'm talking about the reason why I was talking about the economy getting worse, and I was looking at this. I did buy a stock recently that I've had my eye on for a while, and I was questioning the scale of it. I thought, do you know what? In the end, I just bought it because I thought, I don't think the economy is going to get any easier. Businesses are going to have to, find sources of money. They're going to be paid late and all this. And so I bought Time Finance, and I've known it for a long time. I mean, they are doing what the banks are not doing anymore, and that's sort of loaning to.
This is the old 1PM company, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, 1PM. I talked to them when they were 1PM quite a few times. But during COVID, of course, they had a hard time, and because, like I said, the businesses were shutting down. But they had a new CEO and refined the strategy of loaning off their own book. Anything is too risky for their own book. They broke her out. They'll do invoice lending. But if you look at the figures on this, right? And if you look at this, these are the figures. So pretty much this is May 2023, market cap 31, enterprise value 32. This is the net asset per share, 67. I mean, that's 36. But it literally, revenue 27 million, operating profit 4.3, cash flow also.
They basically do subprime lending, don't they?
Yeah. Well, no, to any small businesses that can't get loans from banks are basically subprime
lending.
Yeah, but banks are increasingly reluctant to lend to small businesses, pretty much. That's what they're saying,
Yeah, so anybody who can't get a bank loan, basically.
Yeah, but hang on, banks are being very careful, but they are quite, this is the thing, they said.
Let's be clear about it, it's a skill. This is a sector, that basically they're, lots of people don't want to go to. So it's underserved. And if you're good at what you do and you're good at credit risk and credit management, then you can do very well. And,
And these guys are looking at, their impairments are like very stable all the time, 6% from that. And but look at this growth, right? You've got top line growth. Look at the operating profit growth.
Yeah.
Look at this is the last year and there, 2 years of growth. Now, it's very rare to get growth and value. I said, if you can pay those up, not many companies have that. But even going down to this, price to earnings 10, price to book, EV, if you're at 7, that's going down to about 4 next year, apparently. And it's like everything is in green, even the forecast, even the momentum. And I thought, what's not like here? I can't see this sector getting weaker over the next, 12 months. I think increasingly businesses will find it more difficult, going forward in the next 12 months.
Yeah. That's not the issue. The issue that, and it looks as though the market's getting more comfortable on it, is what the credit quality like is of the loan book. That's actually the nuts and bolts of the business. If they're effectively their credit checking and their monitoring of companies and the rates that they charge is well refined and they can make a good net interest margin without actually having any peak out of the or blow out of their credit quality, then they'll do really well. It's basically like a leverage bank, this one.
They've had record results coming up. The results are in January 25th. But like I said, own lending book is up. Where is it? Net arrears remain stable, 6% lending book. Net tangible assets up. Everything's
up. How much is what's the size of their lending book?
188. It's gone up from 170
okay, so,
last
so the lending
year,
book is 188 and their net tangible assets is 36. So they've got a leverage ratio of roughly around about 5 to 6, haven't they? Which actually is not that aggressive. I know it sounds a lot, but it's actually not that aggressive. But let's just be clear about it. If they get a delinquencies in sort of subprime loans of 5% on the 188, that's basically what 10 million, isn't it? So effectively you'd take 10 million off the 36, and that would be probably round about, I'm just guessing here, 20p per share, something like that. But that would be coming off your net tangible asset, but you know, of 767. So you'd have a notion, even in that sort of scenario, you'd still have a net tangible assets of 45, 50p compared to the current price of 36. So there's a lot of already bad news baked into this price anyway.
Yeah, and well, no, they do say, I mean, they keep stressing it all the time, you know, that they said they're going for, like, you know, quality, and if the risk is too high, it's broke it out pretty much, you know. So their own lending book, you know, loans, they are quite conservative on that. So, and this new guy's coming, like, he's reiterated this over and over again that, you know, it's
quite okay, there you go. Loans, yeah, so, net arrears at 6% is stable, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah. So I think it's they, like I said, this new CEO came in, they've changed strategy a bit, and it seems to be playing out. And I wish I had. I was aware of them a long time ago, but I thought no, and I should have got in earlier. But I still like where they are and what they're doing, and I think they continue to grow. I think nicely, but so that's a new one.
Well
for done. Me.
Well, I'll douse it with a bit of word of caution, because I've got one that hasn't worked out quite well, and you could probably remember what it is, Sondrel.
Oh yeah.
And I came out with another beauty.
I know. Was it late? Was it after hours? Or that?
It was. It was just before the market closed on the 28th, I think it was. Basically, they've run out of money, and their employees are funding the business. So the shares effectively shot down to about 3p or something like that. Market cap of around about 3 million. I mean, it looks like pretty much an emergency state of the situation. I mean, my take is they definitely need to raise money pretty quickly, because they're not going to, in this basis, you know, they're going to struggle realizing working capital. However, having said that, you know, I have exchanged emails with the CEO, and he's, you know,
there's lots of swear words in there.
I was obviously quite distressed, most others. And I said to him, look, you know, it looks as though you're going to have to raise money pretty damn quickly, whether it's from strategic, sort of like partner, or alternatively from the market. And that will help the company get through and deliver on its demand. My instinct actually is that he may, and I do go may on this because I really don't know. My instinct is he may have some rabbits here that he can pull out of hats. And if he can, then, the shares will respond favorably. But let's be clear about it. It is extremely high risk in my view, this one. And even at these levels, I've not been selling, because I actually think there's a low chance that it could, you know, could recover quite a bit of the actual damage. Would you put any? It's a total, in my view, this is a total gambler's stock. You could, but from
but
five.
So I liken this to Tiny Build, right? A little bit, because Tiny Build's got a founder behind it.
Yes, you're probably right, actually.
It's one of those ones where I said to John on the thing, I said, listen, this is going, this is really bad. But the thing is, they've got a legal problem as well, which it complicates it. But I said, the problem is, the guy said the founder is going to put 10 million behind this. If he does that, it's going to jump massively. Now, I wouldn't hit the gamble again in beforehand, but it looks like, but also you've got a legal problem. I said, if they clear one of those hurdles, legal problem, and especially the funding, it's going to jump. And like I said, you know, it did rise, but, you know, it doesn't mean now the business is improving, but just almost like the it's almost like, you know, when you get a patient that's in intensive care, and they put the old jump starts on them, and that's what happens. You know, like, look at that, it's still flat. It went from 2 pence to 5 pence overnight. It's more than doubled, pretty much, when they got their funding landed. They still got legal problems, and they still got the background of the gaming industry not, you know, being that fertile at the moment. But so if it's one of those things, it is a gambler stock at the moment. And if he got a founder there or whatever, willing to put money behind it, he probably will, because it's livelihood. It's everything, isn't it? So,
well, it's also strategic. You know, a strategic partner could put money into it because they want the actual IPR and they want to basically be able to, you know, direct. I mean, they could be, let's be clear about it, edge AI, i.e., you know, the diffusion of artificial intelligence and generative, and you know, artificial intelligence will move from the server and the data center out into devices more next year, because that's how they'll be commercialized. Things used like Microsoft's, the sort of chat bots and the all these kind of guys, will, and Facebook and Google and all this sort of stuff. So you'll get that intelligence out into users' hands and pockets and computers, and you, and these guys play perfectly to that, because they're going to design the, you know, the ASCII chips that actually are going to power these devices efficiently, and at sort of like, you know, 3 nanometer and 6 nanometer. So they should, they're really exact. I mean, I can't believe it, because macro wise, everything should be going. And I can remember when I first talked about it, I was banging the table about this, saying, you know, I think this is going to be really good. How far can I be wrong? I mean, it just is like, you know, it's just gone. Yeah. Even despite what the macro is and the valuation of beforehand, it's just gone horrible on me. So you can be.
You did say that, you know, I remember at the time you were saying that some of the contracts are quite lumpy, and that's the problem, isn't it? When you got cash flow issues, you know, like I said, and that's the thing. And so, in this environment, if you haven't got a tump load of cash and you've got those lumpy contracts and some of them are taking time to land, then that's, you know, that's happened to many companies.
I highlight it because it comes back to your point right at the start of this, you know, chat, i.e. such that, you know, you and I, if you're going to follow us, we can be wrong. And I was wrong big time on this, okay? And, you know, any investor who does decide to, you know, invest on the back of what we've put our money into stocks, then, these things go wrong. And I keep reiterating, you know, my hit rate's only 62%. So 38% of them are wrong. And this is one of those, one of these thirds or 40% jobs. So you just got to accept.
Yeah, and listen, I've had some, you know, like I said, I've been writing this book, an investment guide, because it turns out I had a brilliant strategy for the bull market. Pretty much they were all, you know, they were all sort of high-flying, sort of, you know, hypey stocks that, you know, were pre-revenue, some of them were pre-revenue, some of them loss-making. But you realize only when it comes to a bear market that you don't really have a secure strategy for that. Mm. And now I've tightened up that area. And like I said, I've had some stocks go spectacularly wrong. But, you know, I've had people slag me off, like Gfinity, Plarium. I've been in those. I've lost money in those, you know. So, but I did get out before it got too... And almost that exacerbates the hate from some people. I said, listen, do you think I want to pick losers? No, I don't. I want to pick every stock. Double, treble. I want it to make you money and me money. It's like, I don't do that as a purpose. But when you pick it off the back of what I'm saying and you don't do any research and you have no portfolio management whatsoever, you can't go blaming me. You've got to learn. And like I said, you know, I've lost... the reason why I've learned so much is because... it's because of lessons, and those lessons are generally painful, you know? And so to be a good investor, you have to take those on board, because if you push the blame to someone else, you're not learning those lessons, full stop. And you'll keep making the same mistakes over and over again because you're not learning. And you have to learn. And investing is very powerful because you're in it to make money, and it hits you exactly where you don't want it to hit you. That's in the pocket. And so unless you learn, like I said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. You won't get a different result unless you evolve and learn. You know, I've even had people criticize me for changing my strategy. No, are you kidding? Have you read like some of the, if you look at who's the guy that Warren Buffett originally, his mentor was?
Yeah, Charlie Munger.
No, before Charlie Munger, the guy.
Oh, Ben Graham.
Ben Graham, sorry. Ben Graham had about 8 editions of his book. All changed. You know, it went from just cigar, and even Warren Buffett went from, you know, cigarette butts to actually investing in good businesses rather than ones that were on the, you know, below net asset value or whatever. He went to actually companies that had tangible value with brands and all that stuff. Yeah. He evolved completely, and that's how he would never have gone into Apple, his best performer ever, if he hadn't evolved. And so you have to evolve, you know, and I think some of the best lessons you learn is in a bear market. Absolutely it is. And I've evolved massively. I think I've learned more in the last 2 years than I've ever learned in investing in my entire, you know, time doing it. So, so people, it annoys me a little bit. You find the people that blame you will never be a good investor. because they never take the lessons on board, ever. They always blame you. They won't blame themselves, and they won't learn the lesson. You know, so it's annoying. So anyway, like I said, we always want to pick winners. Non-stop. You were 100% record, didn't we, really? You know?
No. And the other side of the coin is, even if you decide, okay, I'm going to dial down the risk, and we get a company with a fantastic franchise, massive IPR, big company, generating shed loads of crass and good margins. And
you example.
I was actually going to say, Riking, what happened there?
JD Sports came out with a profit warning today. That was one of the best performers of all time, you know, on the market.
And wow.
Look at the JD Sports came out with a profit warning. And in fact, Phil just mentioned that on, I did see it earlier. I said, what are they down? So he said, Phil, I've got a small position, profit warning. Personally, I'd love it long term. And when the dust settles, I'll look at it again.
So I'll tell you what's quite interesting actually on that, Justin. And I know we didn't talk about it because we're neither of us in retail, but you could have started sniffing that one out just before Christmas. Do you know what the big tell was?
No, what?
What's it called? Nike came out with quite a big trading, profit warning just before Christmas. They lost 10%. And clearly, if you've got a high margin shoe, you know, what that says is that essentially sports equipment and sort of like, you know, athleisure and this sort of stuff is suffering. Mm. It isn't quite as big. And these looks as though that's happened, particularly out in, I mean, I don't know where the profit warning was, but, you know, the States had softened off as well as obviously Europe. That's a good example. That's a good example of looking at other companies in that sector, in the same sector for smells about how the business is doing before, you know, you get hit, because you could have probably preempted some of, there was definitely a downside risk from Nike because they're just effectively the poster child of the whole sector.
Yeah, they did say the apparel revenue growth was impacted by milder weather. They always from the second half, while peak trading season across the market was softer and more promotional than we anticipated. Mm. And that's during the busy season. I think now, like you see this, I think people are going to rein in. You know, unless they actually need things, I don't think people are going to be spending a lot this year.
So, yeah, no, I was going to say.
On the other hand, go on.
I was going to say, if you go for really defensive play, look at obviously Next. I don't. They're sort of best in class, aren't they?
I was gonna
say Pfizer because I went into that 12 months ago.
I had an alert on those Pfizer chart. It's coming around, isn't it? Hang on, where's the NSC?
It's basically the US one. Yeah, I mean, you know, all I would say is that even when you decide to dial down the risk and have a sensible investment strategy, you can be big time wrong. And this is down 45% in the last 12 months. So. If not more. And it's a huge company with massive, you know, sort of economic moat surrounding it.
Well, do you know what? I've got a free trade app, right? I can't with Barclays trade US stocks. What I'm going to do on the discussions we had on technicals and fundamentals, I'm not going to research fundamentally Pfizer, but I'll try and play the chart here, okay? So I'm not going to get it yet. But I reckon this is my take on it, right? I reckon this pretty much here it's struggling to get over that, but it's above 50 day moving. I want to see if it gets above 31. I reckon it's a buy, maybe even 32 there, because that's previous support.
I'll tell you, about 32. Yeah, okay. I'll tell you, mate. Don't. Okay, and the reason is because I can explain that dip and that rise. Okay, it's quite easy. If you just hone in on that last month. On December, what that is, and this is a bit of education really for investors, it's a massive loser last year in the US. A lot of US portfolio managers are tax loss harvesting going into the last month, i.e. they'll basically crystallize losses to take against gain, say in the Mag 7, et cetera, in that final year. So that was, you know, sold off heading into essentially right at the end of December. And then when the tax year turns, and also on top of portfolio rebalancing, because lots of fund managers are heavily overweight the Mag 7 and Mag 10, and therefore need to essentially resize their portfolio across relevant sectors, they get the buying. That's all that is basically, essentially, you know, sort of like window dressing and beautifying their portfolios and making sure that it's tax efficient. So it's gone nowhere in a month. It's just artificial selling and artificial buying.
Yeah. Look at that. That's now down, but look at that. That's now down at lows, literally going back 2016, a dip down COVID. But that is now at that low. It's jumped back above that.
Yeah,
that's
I know. It's been a pain trade for me, mate. I've lost, I've lost a good six figure on it. So,
but to going forward, though, I mean, how fundamentally, do you see it improving?
Oh, yeah, no. And Bristol Myers and Roche. I mean, I've got all the big ones. Yeah, there was no, all it means is that I'm going to be holding this for 3-5 years. And I never expected it to go down as much. But no, the pipeline looks good. I've got no problem in terms of the longer term picture. It pays a decent dividend. So I'm just going to hold it. And then you've just got to accept that you might hold companies for a lot longer than you think. It's like I treat this like buying a house. House prices can go up and down. Are you going to sell and take that? No. But in 5 years' time, I bet you it's much higher than when I originally bought it, which was about low 40s, about 42 or something like that. I bet this could be well over $50, $60 in 5 years' time. And I'll have picked up a good dividend on the back of it. So I've got no problem. But I think it comes down to, what your time horizons are and whether you're on margin. And I don't need to sell this. And I'm not in and out on charts, and I'm not in and out if I still think the fundamentals are okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm going to buy a little bit of the 32.
Okay, well, if you do,
I trust your fundamentals on that. But
another one which is quietly doing well is, and I mentioned it before, is Water Intelligence. And they came out with a statement that they've expanded their debt facility by another $5 million at a reasonable interest rate, actually. It's only it's a spread of about less than 3% above US, interest rates, et cetera. So it's quite, for a small cap, basically it's a listed company, but, small cap, that's actually a pretty good rate. It's capped at 8%. And the reason why they're raising 5 million more, they've got plenty of cash, is that they are seeing real demand in terms of their products into 2024. And they want to expand in terms of organic, not even through M&A. Well, okay, they might buy in some of the franchisees, but essentially it's in that in the US and abroad. So this is all largely organic growth. And I mean, that's exactly why you should be doing it. So they've got a very, very good balance sheet anyway, very small amount of debt. And, the long-term sort of fundamentals of this business are going up. So these are quietly in the right position.
I'll take the smile off here. Do you remember I put a smile here? So it comes to there, that's a roll around. No. That's good level. Have you seen that you often get this oversold nature, really bounces aggressively and then get back in the range before it moves back up. And that's quite good there. It's back in that sort of range. Get above that, 450, you're back on. It's a massive rally beforehand. When I look at companies like that, look at that. Huge rally, isn't it, from 2020 to 21? Massive.
And I think a lot of that sort of downside is simply because fund managers have been, forced into into redemptions. They've just used it as an ATM and have just sold it down. So I think this is artificially low. If it was ever decided, and the board, the CEO founder is not exactly, he's towards the end of his career. Whenever he decides to hang up his gloves, then I think they'll sell it, because he owns about 25% of the business, I think. So I don't know. I mean, they look to be in a great place. One I'm just going to hold for the long term. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
What about just top level, just because, I mean, I know lots of people are on it. What about oil going forward? Because what's really scratching my head
is...
We've had lots of geopolitical risk in the Red Sea, but actually the oil price has been going down, which says to me there's too much flipping supply.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was also, supply and, of course, the demand is dynamic there. So yesterday, I looked at all commodities are down, and I'm thinking, this doesn't look very good, is it, for the economic outlook? Like, oil there, literally bouncing off that level, it's been trying to get above, it's a support level at 72, 73. This is Brent, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if you believe, oil is a economic barometer, then it doesn't look like we're in for blowout growth there, does it? I mean,
and what is good for the UK economy is that's an input cost for large parts of the UK. And more importantly, it's the gas as well, because the US is pumping so much oil, about 13 million barrels per day. as a byproduct of that oil extraction, you get lots and lots of LNG, the sort of natural gas, which then can get shipped over to Europe. So I suspect, even if we do have a cold winter, and we haven't had it so far, but if we did get a cold sort of snap, then I've got a sneaky suspicion European gas prices are actually not going to balloon out. So I'm pretty confident, actually, just on the energy side of it, given the geopolitical risk in the Red Sea already should have a premium in that. I actually think, basically a lot of people who have this as an input cost are going to be doing okay. I don't think it's going to risk inflation. I think we've nailed inflation. It all comes down to those lagging impacts of the higher interest rates. What damage has it already done? And then also hinges on how quickly and the central banks recognize the danger of a hard recession and then turn the dial. And I think a lot of the thing about the markets anticipating much steeper decreases in interest rates compared to how the central bankers are viewing it is simply a reflection of actually, unless they do move it quickly and deeply, then we will get a hard recession. And they're assuming that we're going to get a soft landing or a no landing based on a fast response reaction from the central bankers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was odd. You know, one of the most reliable trades you can do in natural gas is literally coming to September, October. It tends to rally, you know. Mm. And this did here, but collapsed straight away afterwards. Weakness there. Technical traders maybe bringing it up. I don't know what's happened there.
And you wouldn't have thought so, would you? Not given what's happened in the Middle East.
Yeah, very odd. Marvellous. Anything else, Paulie? Anything else to look at?
No, I think we're probably pretty much there. Oh, yeah, just one thing would be crazy not to have a chat about. Bitcoin, mate, is that a joke or what? Because it's now over $40,000.
I know. I just genuinely think it'll collapse. because I think it's all based around hype around the ETF. And, of course, is also the dollar play there. But I think it's one of those things. You can't predict. It's a wild chart. You think it's going to collapse and it just rallies like hell. Mm. And so, but I think once the ETF news is done and dusted, it's all about traveling. And I think it'll roll over a bit. But
house prices, mate. And what's UK house builders? Because
I also think they're done for now. I mean they've rallied strongly, and I think that fundamentally, if you look at where are the house builders here, big caps here, where's Taylor Wimpey, for example. I mean, heck of a rally, you know?
I know.
And it's like, if you cross this chart down, it's, that's the all-time highs just peaked out there, but it's rallied a heck of a lot from like 82 pence to 142. And I think fundamentally, I don't see a lot of upside in the next...
Can you overlay, on that chart, can you overlay the mortgage rates or the year, the UK bond yield or something like that?
Let's see if I can. I have to take a look.
Five year would be a good one.
Let me take some of these indicators off because it'll mess it up. And if
I
look.
Because I bet you it's an exact sort of proportional representation,
UK,
isn't it?
UK 5 year. Let's sort of, is there.
Gilt it would be.
Bonds,
yeah.
UK 5 year. Can you see it there somewhere? No. UK. No, we can't do it. I'll do it the other way. Hang on.
Yeah, okay.
I'll go to the 5 year bond. I'll find Taylor Wimpey's easier.
Yeah, okay.
There we go. Right, let's have a look here. Let's get rid of that there. TW. This is the stocks. Taylor Wimpey. It doesn't. It messes it up.
Yeah, okay,
it's a logarithm. Oh, yeah.
That's better. Oh, yeah.
So Taylor Wimpey is...
Yeah, okay. That shows you, doesn't it? Because the yield is going down and the stock price is going up, which makes perfect sense. That's mortgage rates decrease.
Almost a mirror, look at that.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Look at that. Unbelievable. Up and down. Wow. So there we are.
You can understand that, can't you? Because people who want to buy houses now can remortgage at a much cheaper rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. A positive note to end.
Cool, yes. No, I think 2024, in some rally, it's been a cracking year for the seventh time, but I think the first maybe quarter may be tricky, rolling over. We had like big rallies in the US. I mean, that needs to roll over. It'll have an effect over here. You'd also get economic data that's a bit gloomy. But then the central banks, hopefully, don't lag too much this time and say, we've killed inflation. Done. dusted, and they'll start to ease, and then the markets then will go crazy.
Well, if you're right, and we do get a sort of like a dive on the markets, then I'm going to be buying that dip. That's for sure. I need more cash, but if I have spare cash, I'm going to go and shed loads into it because it looks like a no brainer on these small caps that actually have pricing power, decent balance sheets, good growth, profitable. I mean, they're just like, I buy them every day of the week.
Yeah. Well, that's, do you know what? It's exactly what why I'm holding a little bit of cash, about 36%. It's because I think there will be pretty much one more very good buying opportunity, and then the markets will rally, I think. So I'm holding a little bit of cash. So, holdings I have to top up or in the opportunities, but I do think there will be one more sort of decent buying opportunity. And I think we're off the races then, but there we are. That's
good,
that's
man.
Opinion.
All right.
Marvelous stuff.
Speak to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks time, February then, right? No, nearly. Anyway, thanks everyone. Don't forget, hit that thumbs up, subscribe to the channel if you want more content, and of course, share it with someone you love. I'm sure it'd be a nice New Year's Eve present for them. Cheers everyone, bye bye bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.